Hi there, I'm Barbara Turley, and you're watching another episode of Feminine Wealth TV, the show that uncovers the diamond tips on creating truly conscious wealth from change makers, world shakers, and wealth creators. I'm joined on the show today by Deborah Tuttenhauer. She is a transformational success coach, but we're here today to talk about a slightly different topic because Deborah is becoming somewhat of an authority on the subject of women and money. And of course, this is very close to my own heart. So we're going to explore this topic today and try to figure out together why, as women, we have this kind of love-hate relationship with money.
Deborah, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me on this amazing topic.
I am so excited to be here, Barbara. Across the time zones and the oceans, it's so wonderful to finally connect.
Absolutely. So you're coming all the way from near Denver? Is it in Denver you are?
No, actually, I am in Colorado. I am about 4.5 hours southwest of Denver and a mile higher.
Oh, and you're a big skier. You're like me. You're a big ski fan.
A big skier. I live at 9,000 feet above sea level, and it's spring in pretty much all the rest of the United States, except for here. As you can see by my clothes, it is still cold. And that's what happens at this altitude until probably another 2 weeks from now, it'll start to warm up.
Oh, what a beautiful place to live. Yeah. So look, I'm so excited to explore this topic. And I know you and I have spoken about this topic a few times on Skype, and we've been swapping ideas, etc. So talk to me first, though. I mean, you've been an entrepreneur for 20 years. You've been running your own business for 20 years. You've been coaching. Tell me about the sort of history of why did you start as an entrepreneur? What was the journey?
I just love that question. When I began, so I graduated from college in 1981 with a bachelor's degree in psychology, which at that time, maybe even now, it doesn't get you anywhere unless you go to graduate school. And I lived, 1981 was what I used to call, or still call, the dress for success era. And everyone I graduated with went on to become an investment banker, or went to law school, or went to med school, or interviewed in some kind of corporate training program, and none of those resonated for me. And I really wasn't sure. I've always lived my life, even as a teenager, making choices based on what really had deep meaning for me. And when I graduated from college, none of the things that everyone else was doing resonated for me, and I ended up not applying for grad school. I took a year off, and then I started on my journey, and the only thing I knew about my journey at that point in time was, and this is going to be funny for our topic today, money was not important to me, and I couldn't work in a corporation following somebody else's rules. And those were the only things I knew for sure when I was 21 years old. So that was the beginning of the journey.
Yeah, I think a lot of 21-year-olds, particularly today when this topic of meaning and having a meaningful career is coming up for a lot of people. So I think it would resonate again today. We're sort of back to the 80s at the moment.
And it was funny. I was very unusual. I mean, everybody who were my friends at the time, they just didn't get it. Like, what do you mean you're not going to get a traditional job? How are you going to live? How are you going to do this? And for a few years, I figured it out, and I did things that I loved. I skied, and I taught aerobics, just like Jane Fonda. And I taught weight training, and I competed in some bodybuilding competitions, and I volunteered. I started volunteering in classrooms, and that really became the beginning of my professional journey. I went on to get a master's degree in special education. I worked with a very, very involved population. That would be the best thing to use. Children who had many challenges, multiple challenges, physical, mental, emotional, in a public school system. So that certainly wasn't entrepreneurial, but I did entrepreneurial things within that context. I stepped out of the role that they hired me to do, and I went in and worked with parents on their, you know, in their homes with their kids, and I really broadened the program. Realized in that journey, same thing, that I was beholden to other people's structures and rules, and really felt that my level of creativity and pushing of the boundaries wasn't supported within the structure of a school district. So I went back to school,
Yeah.
I received another master's degree in clinical social work, and that was really the beginning then of my true entrepreneurial journey, that is earning money by setting up my own business. I didn't consider myself an entrepreneur at the time. I called myself, you know, just like, you know, the IRS forms in the United States call you. You know, I was a solo practitioner. I was a sole proprietor. I didn't even think of the word entrepreneur until much later down the road, many, many years into my private practice as a clinician, when I began to explore other ways of earning income besides just sitting in an office doing 50-minute hours with the kids and families.
Yeah. Now, that's very interesting, because where did it come to the point, like you said that money wasn't something that was important to you in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of came to this point where you realized, okay, I'm earning an income sitting in this chair, but how do I earn more passive type income? And now, where did the shift happen there? The shift into...
Yeah, a good question. I always felt, up until I would say maybe the last 8 or 9 years, I kind of believed in the money was the root of all evil thing. I didn't believe in greed. I didn't believe in, you know, just doing things to earn money. I was really turned off by what went on in, again, you know, my center is the United States. So what went on Wall Street and what I saw, again, people who I grew up with, I felt they were selling their souls for an income, and they didn't have a life.
Yeah.
And I was so turned off by that. When I met my husband about 16, 17 years ago, I said to him, I don't need anything. I just need a teepee, and I need a car, and I need to be able to afford my car, and I need to be able to, you know, pay for gas and pay for food, and then go on really cool adventures, but I don't need any material goods. That was how I approached life. And I still feel the same way about material goods. I think there was a definite shift in the value of money when I became a mother.
Yeah.
It's really expensive to raise a child.
I think a lot of women, that's when we hit that point of going, oh, maybe money is a little bit more important than I've been giving it credit for.
And it wasn't that money wasn't important. Money was important, but only enough.
Yeah.
Like, money was important because money was the vehicle, and still is the vehicle, to the other things in life that are really important. For me, time freedom is very important. Independence is very important. Making an impact on others' lives is a very strong value of mine. And having adventures, having experiences, and being really engaged with my family, my friends, my community, those are the things that are of highest importance to me. And money was always nothing more than the vehicle to those things.
Yeah.
But as many have come to realize, as life gets more complicated, all those things become more complicated and thus more expensive. You know, hopping in a car by oneself to travel around the country, or figuring out how to be a courier to go to Europe, is one thing when you're single and fancy free. But when you've got a family, it becomes a whole different experience, and you need money to do those things. And I had to come to a place where money ceased to be evil, and in fact, money became important in the sense of its value in making other things happen.
Yeah. I'm interested for a second. Let's focus on this, the money. Money is the root of all evil, because that is such an ingrained belief. And I wonder whether, and I know we've had this conversation in the past before, particularly for women, even though we may not verbalize it that way, of money being the root of all evil, I think a lot of us actually have that in almost in our DNA. We inherently feel that money, because money has been used, it's quite a masculine concept, as we know. It has been born out of a very masculine way of doing things, because obviously men have been the ones out since the dawn of time, you know, hunting, gathering, creating, and women have been the ones in the home. But also money has been used as a tool that is kind of a control tool. It's been used as a power, and often it's been used against women in a lot of ways. So I'm wondering whether, as women, do we feel that somehow money is in direct conflict with our own feminine values? And is that something that you're seeing or feeling a little bit in the work that you're doing?
I think that's a huge topic.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm trying to think of where I want to address it, because you ask multiple questions in that question.
Yeah.
I think, as you and I have spoken about, money has been used. Money is power. We know that. And we know it in reverse, too. If women want the kind of power from a social impact standpoint to change the world, then women are going to have to step up and embrace money, because it's hard to be heard if you don't have that power. And whether we agree with it or not, we live in a culture across Western society that money kind of fuels that power. In reverse, I agree with you. I think money has been used to subjugate for forever, maybe for women. I mean, women weren't allowed to touch money. Women didn't have control of money. Men made the decisions. Men even chose what women used money on, whether it was for shopping or what they bought for the house. And so I think there is, as you said, that undercurrent in our DNA. Mm-hmm. I also think when, and I don't want to say men don't do this also.
Yeah, because that's a generalization.
I don't want to say men don't do this, but when I speak with women clients and when I speak with women friends about the world and about the problems in the world, whether it's hunger and war and famine and violence against women and all the things that we know are going on, destruction of the environment, you know, all the things that are going on in our world, I think we tend to see men as the purveyors of those things. You know, men are making the decisions in countries. Men are going to war. Men are doing all these things that are requiring money to do and would require money to not do. And so I think even when we aren't really dissecting it deeply, there's an undercurrent within us of these negative things are tied to money. And we don't have that power, and so money must be bad.
Absolutely.
And it just sort of is a if this, then this, then this, then this. Even though all those if thens might not be true, it is how our brain is perceiving what's going on that's super negative. And women don't have a lot of index. Certain women do. Mm-hmm. And we could all name them, and we probably all name many of the same ones. But women as a power force for change in the world at large don't have it yet in the way that men do. And so when you don't have it and it looks like it's doing negative things, you then put a negative connotation on it.
Yeah, I love that you've dissected that so well, I have to say, because I know that was a complex question, but I know we've had this discussion a few times, but you know, I'm really interested because I know as well as women that, you know, we have a lot of women at the moment launching businesses. You know, probably for two decades, we've had women, twice the number of women launching businesses as we do men. We've had, you know, more women than men coming out graduating university for probably 20 or 30 years now. And yet we still have women earning less money than men. We still have less women running multi-million dollar businesses than men. And again, it's not that it's all about the money, but there is some sort of blockage, I think, around this women and money topic. And I'm interested to hear your take on when you're coaching women in business in particular, what are you seeing around how they approach business or how they approach starting a business compared to how men would approach it?
So when I coach, I'm a funky business coach.
Yeah.
I am not your MBA school spreadsheet business plan business coach. I'm a person that people come to not for the hard, and by hard I don't mean difficult, I mean like hard, like factual, concrete parts of business. I'm more the person that people come to when they got this feeling that they want to launch a business, or they've already launched a business, but they don't have a firm grasp on what it's really about, who their audience really is, what their impact really is, what they're trying to achieve, or they can't seem to get wrap their mind around their values and their passions. and how you translate those into a business that is going to earn them money. Or they're working a business and they're really unhappy and they can't figure out why that is. So all of that I call inner game.
Mm.
And that's why people come to me generally, is there's an inner game challenge that they're having and they can't quite grasp it, but either they're not happy, they're unsure, they're confused, and tied into all of that generally is they're either not making money or they are making money, but they're so not clear and unhappy on what they're doing that they don't even want that money anymore. So when I'm working with people, I'm doing two things simultaneously. I'm helping people discover their own set of really deep core values, the thing that they're really never going to compromise on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm helping people dig deeply into what they're really good at. Like, and the things you're really good at are often things that you don't think you can charge for because you're so good at them and they come so easy for you that you assume they're everyone else.
Surely everybody must know that. Yeah.
Everybody must know that.
Yeah.
And then we decide on what their passions, their purpose, their meaning, their expertise, how to put that all together to create a business. And then what is that business? What are you selling? What is your product? What is your service? Who is your audience? How are you going to charge for this? And so we start with the soft stuff. We end with a very concrete marketing plan,
mm-hmm.
with a sales funnel, with all the things that businesses ultimately have to get to, which are the hard things, right? The concrete things. What are you selling? How are you going to price it? How are you going to get the money to come in? Who is your audience? How are you going to market? So we end there. What's so interesting, going back to your original question, is I do both those pieces. When I have a man on the phone, and again, this is not 100% men or women, but in general,
mm-hmm.
they want to know from the beginning how they're going to make money. And I have a really hard time initially getting them to focus on what are your values?
Yeah, what lights you up?
What's really important to you? What's your purpose in life? You know, when you're on your deathbed, what's going to have had meaning to you? They just want to go, okay, I've got this idea. I'm going to, like, sell this piece of equipment. I'm going to sell it from this warehouse. And I just want you to help me make a website and market this thing. And when I start to talk about, well, what is your unique value proposition, for instance, and tying that back into what makes them different from someone else selling the same piece of equipment in the warehouse, it's a hard thing to get them to not want to just talk about this is the price and this is the money and how am I going to sell it.
Yeah.
Whereas women want to talk about their feelings and their values and their passion and their purpose. And I'm thinking right now of a client I'm just finishing up with who has been on this incredible journey to work with people who are going through separation and divorce. She has a beautiful structure of courses and books and all kinds of things. It's been harder, even though she has a good business mind, to get her to focus on the funnel.
And the money. Yeah, where's the actual revenue coming from?
Like,
yeah.
I'm like, this is awesome. Where's the money coming from? Oh, yeah. And sometimes it takes me hitting that question from a number of different directions to get my female clients to say, okay, yes, I've landed this piece. You know, I get the concept, I get the values, I get the passion, the purpose, the audience, the avatar. I even get how I'm going to market it. I get the wording. But now I have to focus on the funnel. I have to focus on how I'm going to price these things and where am I going to find my customers or my clients and how it's all going to flow and ultimately how it's going to become a business, not just this really cool, passionate idea.
And do they, when women, when you hit that point with a female client, do you find any resistance coming up there of not wanting to approach that part of the, or like a tiredness, exhaustion coming into that part of the conversation? Or why is that?
I don't find tiredness, exhaustion. What I do find is, and not everyone. So, you know, we're talking in general.
In general,
But what I do find is they might say, okay, let's say I'm working, because I work with a lot of solopreneurs,
yeah.
people with very small businesses. And they'll say, well, I think I should price my services X. And I'll say, really? And they'll say, well, and then you get that sort of soft, mushy, well, what about the people who can't afford me, and I don't want people to think I'm greedy, and you get that all of a sudden, that whole constellation comes
yes.
up, which comes back to what you and I have spoken about, and I think we also spoke about earlier today, is that feeling of not really wanting to make a stand and say, yes, this product, this service has this value, and yes, this is what it really is going to cost, and yes, that's really okay. It's more of a, like, ooh, once I put a value on it, aren't I becoming one of those greedy people? Or
yeah.
aren't I becoming...
But this,
something
this,
uncomfortable?
This gets to this point of, you know, money is associated with greed. And
yes.
it has a very strong link still. And Wall Street hasn't helped, let's be honest. I mean, The Wolf of Wall Street, even the movie, I'm thinking, no wonder people have such an aversion to the whole concept of money, wealth, creating more. And I'm wondering, and again, this is such a huge question in one line, but in your, like, in your experience, you're a coach, you know, you're into this transformational stuff. And why do you feel as women we have this aversion to the money discussion? Again, gross generalization, but I'm seeing with clients I talk to too, I see it a lot, and it is something that we as women, like, often women will say to me, oh, now you wouldn't believe I do get this, but I get women saying to me, oh, but I'm not in it for the money. And I think, well, nobody's in it for the money, but that's sort of implying that the money's not important as part of business. And unfortunately, it is an extremely important part of business. Right up there with passion and money, they're kind of the two fuels that drive big businesses and change and amazing revolutions, I guess. So why is it, as women, generalization I know, do we feel this way when it comes to the money discussion? Huge question.
Okay, I'm gonna answer. There's a lot of answers to that question.
Yeah.
There's what we've already talked about, the connotation that money and greed and the Wolf of Wall Street and abuses of power, you know, there's all those pieces, right?
Yeah.
So that's an undercurrent. But I think on an individual level, and you know, somebody is gonna comment on this and just blast me for saying this, but I think, I find, I have seen in all my work with women over 20 years, both as a therapist and now working as an entrepreneur, business coach, women have a really hard time valuing themselves at the level that they really are valuable.
I agree 100%.
And taking a stand and kind of like, I have a woman hear me roar, and yes. You know, like, yes, I am worth this. My expertise is worth this. This product I developed is worth this.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard for women to balance within themselves the reality of their own value to themselves and to society. And also that feeling of, if I value myself, if I charge this amount of money, they're concerned that people will see them in a light that is not positive. You know, men put on their suit and their tie and they go into, let's say, their job interview and they're asked what you want for a salary, and they will consistently pick a number that is actually higher than is normal for that particular job.
Of course.
Studies have shown that women will do the same thing. They'll dress up, they'll go in, they'll have their interview, they'll feel really strong, and when the person on the other side of the desk says, what salary would you like, they will pick a number that's actually lower than the salary that's normal for that particular job. It's almost like... So you think it would be sort of kind of okay if I, like, sort of kind of almost asked for this amount of money?
Yeah.
But that's the feeling that comes through, and I think it's a mixture of being able to embrace, like really embrace all of their value. And I think it's also the fear of being viewed as, instead of a strong, powerful woman, being too brazen.
Yeah, or over-inflate, ego. There's too much ego attached
too
to over-inflate.
Whereas men who have ego are perceived as powerful. Women who have ego are perceived as that other B word.
Yeah, yeah, it's not attractive. It's not feminine. And it's not, who wants to be that woman, you know?
And so, you know, people will say to me, well, where does the change start? And I think it has to start in all places.
I agree. Yeah.
I think it has to start within women, you know, almost the 1970s Gloria Steinem consciousness raising.
Yeah.
I think it has to start with as women and mothers and a generation who can inform a younger generation, raising those girls and those young women to not have those same connotations.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it needs to start when you're in that salary room, not being afraid to state that value so that the person on the other side has to really deal with their feelings about it.
Yeah.
And standing up for women as a whole, getting paid what they're worth. I mean, all the different pieces, just like any kind of cultural change,
yeah,
it has to start from the inside out, and it also has to come from the outside in.
I'm so glad you said that, because one thing I'm really passionate about talking about, and I actually was talking on this topic at a recent event here in Sydney, where I feel that this is people sort of, sometimes as women as well, and a generalization, we can say, you know, well, men don't give us, you know, airtime in corporate worlds or in interviews or in salary negotiations, when actually I believe this is more of a society-wide issue where, as women, you're right, it needs to start within us, and being aware of some of our own subconscious beliefs and biases around money and how we're reflecting that back on the world is actually causing, it's perpetuating this cycle. So I feel as women, we need to step up into our power, into our feminine power, and then actually the world will start to reflect back what we really want. So I love that this is I think it's more of a society issue, and society will benefit massively. And if women want to create the change that we want to create, it starts with ourselves and how we talk to our daughters.
And we don't have to be men.
No, not at all.
And you said it right there, the feminine power is so important. It's not dressing and becoming little men.
Absolutely not. Yeah, be feminine.
It's not that at all.
Yeah. There's a reason I called this show Feminine Wealth TV, because the next topic I want to get onto is this concept that we've been talking about of a kind of a revolution around the way how we interact with money and how the whole of society interacts with wealth. And I feel that as women, if we do step up into this feminine power, we have the power to change how wealth is distributed in our world, how money is used, and then we change the connotations that we attach to money. And actually, as women, we have a power. We actually have a great opportunity right now to cause a very positive revolution around money and wealth and you know, how we all interact with it in society. What's your view on that?
You know, when you're speaking, I just love that. I mean, all I want to do is,
it's powerful,
right?
No. I even get goosebumps when I say it.
You said something to me when we spoke a few months ago, before I was going to university to give a talk to women about money, young women who were still in college. And one of the things that you said, which it just stuck with me, and I've been using it, I've been crediting you.
Oh, good.
Many women over and over again, is the idea of all the things that you just said, which is so crucial. It's not just me in my family, in my kitchen, in my office, in my living room, in my community. It's me as a woman stepping into my power and changing almost that vibration by my connection with other women and other women and other women and other women. And that is how change happens throughout the entire world. So everything you just said, I love so much. And the thing that stuck with me that you also said is, if women don't want the money for themselves, there's a lot of places that need that money. There's a lot of things, if you want to live a monastic life in your TPE, which I used to want to do and still have dreams about, you don't have to be greedy. You don't have to buy Lamborghinis and diamonds and yachts and, you know, live a drug-fueled, you know, orgy-type
existence
just because you earn a lot of money. You can earn that money, and if you don't want it, give it away. We can all list 20 places that could use your millions today.
Absolutely.
And make a huge difference in the world. And that was, you know, going back to one of your earlier questions, that's where, that was the crux of the switch for me.
Yeah.
When I realized that money was nothing more or less than a vehicle to all the things that I wanted for my life and my family, and all the impact I wanted to make on the world and other people's lives and other people's families. Money was the vehicle to that, because that's how our world works.
Yeah.
That's how it works. And so, you know, I can send my $100 or $500 today to some organization in Nepal, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
But imagine if I could take $1 million and charter a plane and show up in Nepal in some village that nobody is impacting, and those people still are living in tents. How much more wonderful would that be?
And for you as well. Could you imagine?
I mean,
you can be fulfilled in lots of ways. But something you said on another interview that I watched that you did was that some people, you know, when you're struggling financially, you know, you don't have time, energy, space, anything to even create the energetic space to think about anybody else or impacting the world or anything, because you're just trying to get through the day to day. And a lot of people are living that way in countries where, you know, I say to some women, you know, they say, well, it's not about money for me. And I go, well, you've been lucky enough to be born into, you know, one of the top, I don't know, like 1% of places in the world. You've had the privilege of the highest educational standards in the world. Who are you not to make money and to use that money to actually elevate others, if that's what you choose to do? You know, you can, if you want to buy Lamborghinis and diamonds and all that, that's fine too. But, you know, there's an awful lot of people saying, you know, I don't want the money. And I go, yeah, but, you know, if you have an ability to make it, then maybe you have a responsibility to go and make it. And then let's channel it in the right way and bring our feminine energy to the money industry. And then maybe money won't have such negative connotations. It's up to us to infuse it with the values that we really want to see it portray. So that's kind of my view on this whole topic.
And I love that so much, because when you work with, I mean, you and I would assume, I don't know your background, but just where you are now, I would guess that you aren't raised in a slum.
No.
And you aren't raised in a third world country. And you weren't walking 2 miles for your water.
No, no.
And I think I agree with you, and I've said this, you know, a lot of my life, there is a level of privilege to growing up in a Western country, growing up in a middle class or upper middle class family, you know, growing up where you didn't want for food and shelter and heat, and you have the privilege of being able to say, oh, money's not important, or, you know, I don't want to do that, or I just like me, I want to live in my TV, or I want to get a job, or whatever. That is so not the norm for the majority of people on this earth.
Yeah, I mean, girls, I always say this, I mean, we still have girls being, or children being sold into sex slavery, and we have, you know, all these different, and, you know, there's a woman I'm very close to who lives in Bali, and she, I've had her on the show, actually, and she runs the Bali Children Foundation, and I talked to her about this topic of, you know, girls and sex slavery and all this stuff, and, you know, I asked her her view about the money issue in relation to this, and she said, oh, yeah, that's very much about money, because that girl, a family will actually support that, because that girl can earn 10 times more money doing that for the family than she ever could. So actually, it's almost like an honor to send her into that. So that was the psyche of what I didn't realize, that that's the psyche of a family like that. And yes, that is means that money is, it's very much a money decision. It's driven by this powerful tool called money. So I just think we can channel things in a different way to change that in so many different ways. So, and as women, that's my calling to all women, to listen to these conversations and to start to, yeah, step into that fear or the, you know, whatever that feeling is about asking for more money. You just own that, because that is your right and that is your value.
Yeah. And I love what you said a little while ago of, like, who are you to not make the money if you have the ability to make the money? It's almost like your responsibility. You were lucky enough to be in this position. It's your responsibility to make that money so that you can help those people who are not in those situations, who need your help, who... It's so huge in that way, and for people almost to step outside of their own
themselves,
and to step outside of their own, like, and see that it's about more than just you. And then the other piece is to go back inside, and if you are having an issue with money, if you do have fears around money, if you can't own your own value, then dig into that. You know, get some help, get a therapist, get a coach, talk to a friend, you know, call up Barbara.
or Deborah.
Instead of just sort of pushing it aside and glossing over it, get into it, figure out where it is for you and what it is for you and what messages you've been carrying around. You know, I work with stories a lot. What's the story that you've been carrying around for decades that might not be true?
Yeah.
It's not letting you take that next step. That's not letting you step into your power. Get some help. Dig into that story and shift it. You can always shift it. Every single day you wake up, you can decide that you're going to do it differently.
Yeah.
And if something's blocking you, get some help or do some of your own inner work and get rid of that block so you can, you know, be bold.
Yeah. So, Deborah, if our viewers want to connect with you and follow this conversation a bit more on your blog, and, you know, they're following it already on mine, where should they go to connect with you?
Super simple. Just onto my website, which is my name, DeborahTutnauer.com. Would you like me to spell it? Or
no, it should be on the screen right now.
So DeborahTutnauer.com is my website, my blog. I write blog posts about, this will show up on a blog post, there's some other podcasts, and join in the conversation. There's a contact link if you want to contact me directly. I love comments, and I'll respond to your comments. I'm really easy to find there, and if you Google me, I'm really easy to find. Google finds me all.
I Googled you earlier. Listen, Deborah, that's been fabulous, and it's such an amazingly powerful topic, and I know we've had a few discussions about it. So thank you so much for coming on the show today and helping me to explore this topic even further.
You are so welcome, and it's an honor. It's really an honor. I love your website, Barbara. I love what you're doing. I'm so glad we've connected, and I hope this is the beginning of more conversations and things maybe we could do together to help women, you know, go boldly forth.
I think so.
And thank you again for joining me for another week for Feminine Wealth TV. Remember, you can catch me later this week on my podcast, Wealth Unplugged, on iTunes or over on my website, energizewealth.com. And I'll be giving you my 3 key takeouts from my chat today with Deborah. So until next week, have a great week. We'll see you then.